Today on Real Ghost Stories Online, at 11 years old, she left her body on the operating table and found angels waiting in the lights.
Welcome to Real Ghost Stories Online. Call in your real ghost story now at 855-853-4802 or write in at realghoststoriesonline.com. You're about to enter the world of the unknown and quite possibly the undead. This is Real Ghost Stories Online.
That it is, and welcome to the program. If you'd like to share your ghost stories with us, 855-853-4802. That is the phone number to call. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week to share your ghost stories with us. If you've just joined us because of the Halloween holidays, well, welcome. We do this thing year-round, and we've been doing it year-round, 365 days a year, pretty much for, I don't know, 13, 14 years, something like that. I've kind of lost track. But we're happy that you are here, and we'd love to hear your ghost story. RealGhostStoriesOnline.com, another place where you can share your real ghost stories with us. I'm Tony Bruschi. That's Todd Michaels. That's Carol Hughes. And we're the Brady Bunch.
You're just half of them.
Yes. Near-death experiences, or yeah, that would be a near-death experience, essentially.
Yeah,
on an operating table, not being conscious of yourself, or being conscious, but you're outside of your body. You're looking down. We've heard these stories in the past. What are your guys' thoughts on that? I'll start with Carol.
Okay, Tony. You know what I find interesting is that extremely different people have had this experience, but there's a lot of similarities with the experience.
Mm-hmm.
I find that to be really interesting because a lot of people who have had them, they don't want to come back. Like they feel like they're going someplace familiar, someplace welcoming.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times they're told, no, you need to go back or you can't stay here. Or sometimes in the operating room, they just kind of get sucked back into their body or something. But I find it really interesting how similar they can be. What do you think, Todd?
Yeah. I mean, I agree with that. I also think like when people talk about sleep paralysis, right? A lot of those stories are very much the same too. And I wonder if there's a correlation between that state of being in sleep paralysis and that state of, you know, being on an operating table or whatever, and being in between maybe being awake or being sedated and all that kind of stuff. I wonder if they're tied in together in any way, shape, or form, because the stories are very similar.
Yeah. Yeah, they are.
A lot of times with sleep paralysis, those are really terrifying.
Yeah. How come we don't have more stories of people on the operating table? Why is everybody seemingly going to the light? We don't really hear many stories where it's like, and then I was in a blazing inferno and
maybe those people don't get to come back. They just go on.
They don't get the choice unless it's like, it's like Alec Murdaugh or somebody,
or it's proof that there is no hell. I mean, that would be the
true
other thing, right? Like the only place you can go is toward the light. Doesn't mean it's heaven. It just means that maybe there's not a heaven or hell.
It's just the other side. It is what it is. And it turns out, we're coming from hell. Surprise.
Listen, I would not doubt that one bit.
Yeah. Surprise. I'm reading or doing an audiobook right now. It's one that actually Robin Dreek recommended, who's on our other show, Hidden Killers. Proof of Heaven by Eben Alexander. Has anybody read that one yet?
No. Is it worthwhile?
It's so far very fascinating. He was a neurosurgeon and completely, it was very scientific, didn't really believe in heaven or hell or anything. It was just, you know, the brain is a electronic machine, basically, and it does a lot of amazing things, and it makes you feel things and think things. But at the end of the day, when it's out, it's out. That's, you know, what he believed. And then he went into a coma, and for all intents and purposes, they thought he was going to die. And I'm giving extreme cliff notes here, and was brain dead. But he has these experiences, these memories. I'm only like a quarter of the way in, so I don't have a lot to share yet, but I'm finding it really fascinating. Especially from that sort of a more of a scientific perspective than just a, you know, chicken soup for the soul type area.
Yeah.
But I'll report more back.
No, because I am fascinated by that sort of thing.
Yeah, I'm reading it for Book It. I'm going for the personal pan at the end of the day.
That's a great idea.
You get a little stamp at the end of summer so that if you get 20 stamps at the end of summer, you get a free bookmark from whatever it was, Scholastic Books.
We had the Book It, and it was you read like 5 books. You had the pin, and you put stars on it, and then you got like a star from your teacher. I don't think you guys had it. I don't think you had it, Todd. So I think it was a handful of years after you. I think it started when I was pretty little, and you didn't have Book It, right?
Mm-mm. I mean, we had something like that, but it wasn't called Book It. Yeah,
it was Pizza Hut sponsored it because nothing like having fast food integrated into your childhood education. It was wonderful. It was encouraging kids to read. I think it was a good thing. I really do. And I think they still do it. But you read like 5 books and then you go in and then you get your free personal pan and you're like, yay, I worked towards this.
What kid wouldn't do that for free personal pizza?
Well, I think, and here's, I don't know that it works as well today because we're such a society that eats out so much and like food is on demand.
Yeah.
And I don't know. It used to be, and it still is in some circumstances, where going out to eat was like maybe a few times a month, if that, you know, and it was an event, and it was like, and if you as the kid were the one that earned it by what you did, maybe you didn't have the money, but your actions earned you something of monetary value, which was a personal pan pizza, you felt more proud of it. I think it was a good system, but I don't know how that would translate today in the way that
I'm not sure that it would. And I also think it's the reason why a lot of Pizza Huts closed. You guys like blew them out of pizza or something like that.
Yeah, exactly.
They went bankrupt.
I love the personal pan. It's greasy. It's buttery. That to me is like comfort food. It's like macaroni and cheese, the Pizza Hut personal pan. Although, you know what I miss more than anything is just a good bar pizza in Wisconsin.
Oh my God. Yes.
It is so hard to find that outside of that state. A good bar pizza. It is. They don't exist. They do not exist.
Well, there's a reason for me to stay in Wisconsin then, because I love nothing better than to have a couple of beers and a good old bar pizza.
That's why I ship them in. I've actually ordered Rocky Rococo sauce before. And that's not a bar pizza. It's another Wisconsin pizza. But I do ship them in from time to time. Joe's Fox Hut, everyone.
Oh, my God.
It's a good one. All right. Let's go to our ghost story here today. It starts, "Some stories begin not in darkness or shadow, but in blinding, sterile light, the kind that smells faintly of antiseptic and sharp alcohol. This story begins long before the light. It begins in the cramped bedroom of an 11-year-old girl doubled over with pain that felt too big for her small body. It started as a deep ache in her stomach, the sort of pain any parent might think was just a virus or something she'd eaten. But for the second day, the ache sharpened, spreading like wildfire across her abdomen. Her skin grew calm, fever hot to touch. Nausea came in heavy waves that left her breathless. She tried to tell her parents how bad it was, but they didn't understand, not yet. 11-year-olds complain of stomach pains often, and they thought she'd recover after rest and fluids. But the pain only grew worse, gnawing at her insides until she could barely stand. Then the seizures began. She remembers the look on her mother's face the moment her body jerked and convulsed on the couch. That was the instant she realized this wasn't something that would pass on its own. Her father didn't waste another second. They bundled her into the car and drove straight to their family doctor, the man who had known her since birth. She can still recall the smell of the office, the faded linoleum, the tiles worn down from years of children's sneakers, and the scent of rubbing alcohol that clung to everything. The doctor took one look at her and his expression changed. His voice, usually slow and reassuring, sharpened with urgency. "She needs a hospital now." Within minutes, they were on the road again, the car racing towards the nearest hospital. She sat in the back seat, curled against the door, her stomach a battlefield of pain, her forehead beaded with sweat. She felt like her insides were on fire, her body alternating between burning and shaking chills. And by the time they arrived, she was delirious. Her fever had spiked high enough that her thoughts blurred and strange visions began to color the edges of reality. The hospital staff moved quickly, gowns, masks, bright lights, voices overlapping. Words like septic floated past her ears, the kind of word you don't fully understand at 11 but instinctively know is bad. She remembers the operating room vividly. The white ceiling tiles blurring overhead as the anesthesia took hold. And then she remembers something that no one could explain. One moment she was lying on the table, the next she was above it. She was floating, weightless, looking down at the doctors clustered around the operating table. The sight should have terrified her, the sight of her own small body lying so still, the incision running from hip bone to hip bone, but strangely it didn't. All the pain was gone. The fear was gone, too. She wasn't alone. There were beings there. Angels. Not the winged figures from storybooks, but luminous shapes that glowed with a soft golden light. Their presence wrapped her in an overwhelming calm, a warmth that spread into her even though she had no physical body. She saw other figures as well, shadowy outlines that drifted in and out of the room's edges, not quite formed. They didn't frighten her. They felt like part of the place, as if they had been there long before the surgery began. In her mind, or perhaps aloud, she asked the question that pulsed in her chest, "Am I dead?" The angels smiled, their expressions radiant, and their voices rose together in a harmony that didn't sound like human speech. The sound was music, rich, layered, like an entire choir blending into a single chord. "It's not your time yet," they said, their voices one woven melody. "You must be patient." Somewhere in the distance beyond them, she heard music, more beautiful than anything she'd heard in her life. She wanted to go to it, to drift towards that sound, but the angel stayed close, gently keeping her where she was. Her eyes, if she had eyes in that state, wandered back to the table below. She watched as though observing someone else's operation, detached but curious. She saw every detail. The surgeon's steady hands, the black tube secured in her mouth, the way they flushed out the infected tissue around her appendix. She even heard their conversation as clearly as if she stood right beside them. They spoke in low, focused tones about her irregular heartbeat, about how dangerously low her blood pressure had dropped, about how small she looked for a girl, nearly 12 years old. Their words didn't frighten her. In that suspended state, nothing did. Three angels hovered directly over her body on the table, their presence as constant as the rhythm of the beeping monitors. Two more floated near her own disembodied form, their outlines more difficult to see, but unmistakably there. She felt certain they were guardians, hers, though she couldn't have said how she knew. Time moved strangely there, as if moments had no weight. Then, without warning, something shifted. The angels turned on her, their glow brightening as they spoke again in that melodic chorus. "It's time to go back." She resisted. She didn't want to return to the pain and the body lying beneath the surgical lights, but there was no arguing. She felt as if an unseen current had grabbed her soul and was pulling her downward back towards the still form on the table. The sensation was abrupt, like being sucked down through water into a place that was heavier and less forgiving. Her next conscious memory was waking up in recovery. The air was cool, sterile, filled with the soft beeping of monitors and the hushed footsteps of nurses moving between curtained bays. For a moment, she lay still, wondering if what she'd experienced had been a dream. But what she found, when she found her voice and began to tell her story, the reaction of the doctors told her otherwise. She described floating above the table, how she'd heard every word of their conversation, even the comments about her heart and blood pressure. She recounted watching them stitch her wound from hip to hip, how she'd seen the tube down her throat. The doctors stared at her with surprise, curiosity etched across their faces. One of them fetched another physician to listen, then another, and they asked her to repeat certain details. Details she couldn't have known unless she'd been in the room and awake. At 11, she didn't fully grasp why her account mattered so much. To her, it wasn't frightening or miraculous. It simply was. Years later, she would understand just how extraordinary the experience had been. It wasn't her last brush with that other realm. There would be more stories to tell. But that night in the operating room left her with something undeniable. A calm certainty that death wasn't to be feared. She often says now that she doesn't dread the end. To her, death feels like a doorway. One she's peeked through and found bathed in music and light. It's just another part of the journey, not the end of it at all. When she remembers those angels, the golden warmth of their presence and the music that called from beyond, she recalls feeling happy, truly happy, for the first time in days, despite the crisis unfolding beneath her. She remembers its strange freedom from pain and the lightness of being detached from her body. The scar from that surgery remains a thin reminder running from hip bone to hip bone, but it's not the cut she thinks of when she looks at it. It's what came after. The moment she realized that what we call life is only a chapter, that sometimes the veil between here and what comes next is as thin as breath. For an 11-year-old girl in crisis, it was a moment that changed her forever. And for the rest of her life, the memory of floating above and the operating table surrounded by angels and music would become the reason she no longer feared what waits beyond the final heartbeat. And that's the rest of the story.
That's a good story.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that one.
I almost feel cheated that I haven't almost died so that I could experience that.
You know,
you're almost like, well, I'll go through something just so that I have some inkling of what's next, because it seems like everybody who goes to that place, if there is such a place, and comes back, they're all like, oh, there's nothing to worry about. It's like, well, how is this fair? How do you nearly die and get to know the knowledge that it's okay when you die? The rest of us have to suffer.
And she learned that at 11.
I know.
That's
and that's what makes it fascinating. I think the fact that she was able to talk about certain things that an 11-year-old wouldn't have knowledge of or know how to verbalize.
Yeah. You know, another thing I found since I've been hosting on the Grave Talks is I've talked to quite a few people who have had near-death experiences, and it's not just changed them in a way that you would assume it would. And, you know, kind of having a foot in both worlds for a minute, and it wasn't terrifying and it felt like going home or however they describe it, but it kind of left them with some abilities. Like they were, some people say that after that experience, they were able to see spirits and communicate with spirits. And I'm like, it makes sense, because for a while you had a foot in both worlds. You were there, you were here.
Yeah.
And everyone I've talked to that's had a near-death experience, it really has profoundly changed them. And how could it not change the way you look at the world?
No, I don't know.
Especially when you're now seeing dead people. That would
I kind of
really
feel like I would get kind of railroaded on that too. I would nearly die. I would see the, you know, the future or whatever that means. But then I wouldn't have a great gift. I would like be able to play the kazoo or something like that. I would get like a really nasty gift out of the whole thing.
The recorder. Right? You can play it really good. Like you can knock out any Kenny G song, but it's a fucking recorder. Right, and like nobody wants to hear it.
Imagine the YouTube or the TikToks you could do. And you maybe make some money, because nobody has ever heard such a great recorder being played.
Right. Like not an acoustic guitar or something where I could go on the road and make some cash. It would be the recorder. That's what I would end up getting for a special gift.
When Harper was younger, and as we all do in elementary school, there's whatever reason that unit of music where you get a recorder and they try and teach you how to play this instrument that nobody wants to ever play again. I remember I had it in the studio. I think it was there's actually episodes of this show from way back when where I had it in there, and I figured out how to play the intro to Titanic to my heart.
Oh, that's good. Like,
yeah.
Okay, now here's the thing, because you keep everything in that studio. You've got everything from Michael Jackson tickets to Halloween decorations. Is there a recorder in the studio?
Not in this. I mean, that was that was like five studios ago or more. Because I don't know. I've had so many studios for this show. I don't even know how many we've had now. It was in the original. It was in the original in the house in Wichita.
You buried it in the wall with the skeletons.
The skeleton has it like
exactly.
I know what you're getting for your birthday this year. Todd Mayer's gonna.
And Carol, we'll put a collection plate around. You, me, and Stacy will buy him a recorder for Christmas.
I found one in my garage the other day. I did find one.
We're gonna give you a nice one. You're gonna be like, wow.
Is there such a thing? Is there a nice recorder?
Wouldn't you assume?
I don't know. I've never seen one play anyone outside of elementary school music class. There's nobody like an adult like, and we're going to go to the professional recorder concert. Like, they're doing Fleetwood Mac.
Tickets are like $150 a piece. They better be good.
I don't know if it was like a Saturday. I don't think it was a Saturday Night Live. There was something that I saw where it's this rock show. And then the guy gets out the recorder and starts wailing, and the crowd goes crazy. Like, he's so good at the recorder.
Sounds about right.
That could be you.
Yeah, I love that.
You're like ruling yourself out of a rock career because you might play the recorder really well. Don't rule that out.
Don't rule it out. Here's a here's another thought I just had when we were talking about near-death experiences. And I wonder if this will ever be a thing. Near-death experience tourism. Ooh. Where under very strict medical conditions, they will unalive you. They will let you die, or they will induce death and then start you back up. So you can have a near-death experience.
I don't like that idea.
I don't either, but I wonder if we're going to get somewhere where it can be. We could do it now, but
right now.
With some risk.
Yeah, some risk, but you'd signed off on that. And if you had enough money, you could do whatever you wanted. So it would be all the rich people that would do that. And it would be like, you know, like taking drugs for the first time or something. You get,
and then they're all like, oh, my God, what was your I'm addicted to NDEs.
Yeah. I can't wait to do it again.
You go into space on Tuesday and then on Wednesday they kill you for, you know, half hour or whatever.
Exactly. That's what I'm thinking. It's like kind of like that where it's, you
never
know,
out of that.
What could possibly go wrong? Let's go down to the Titanic on a PlayStation controlled, you know, tube. It's that sort of like you have more money than you possibly could ever need. And now you're just doing stupid shit with it. Like dying.
I can't even believe
your kid with you.
You brought that up. I can't even believe people actually went and did that. Like, they're down there in literally a northern tissue roll floating down by the Titanic. Like, really?
Didn't the guy take his kid with him?
Yeah. The fucking second I see it's being controlled by an off-brand PlayStation controller, I think I'm out. I'm like... You couldn't even buy the, like, on-brand one. Like, the extra $10 was too much when we're talking about going down in a tube to the Titanic. That was a feat too far.
It's an old Pong controller from way back, and literally the entire time you're going down, it's like, bleep, boop, beep, bleep, boop,
okay,
beep, bleep.
That I have. I have that right in the other room.
I can go
get it right now.
I feel like, Carol, we could spin the wheel, come up with something, and it's probably something Tony has in his studio.
Oh, my God, yes. Or nearby.
I have the Pong. It's right out this door. It's like 20 feet away from me right now.
Beep, boop, boop,
on a shelf.
Boop, boop,
it's the Telestar one, and I got it at a garage sale. In our hometown, yeah. Yep, that was my first one, and I played it on a black and white TV in the living room, in the kitchen.
Because mom and dad wouldn't let you put it on the good TV. So
nope, No, I think I think that TV I also got from a garage sale. I think I got it the same day, actually. I think we got the Pong at the garage sale, and then there was like somebody from our church that was like, I was like, Mom and Dad, it's a black and white TV. Can I get it? It's only like $2. And the woman was like, oh, he can have it. It was my first TV. And
it was given to you.
It was given to me. And I used to watch Letterman on that thing at night, but you had to like hold the antenna and like move your body certain ways so it would come in correctly. And I had to watch the monologue like over here in the room. And by the time the guests came on, you kind of had to be over here and touching the antenna and the bed and the cat with like other, you know, extremities of your body just to see it and hear it. Or if you wanted sound, you kind of had to,
Damn
kids do not know the struggle.
Exactly. I was just going to say, damn kids these days don't know what we had to do just to watch TV.
My God. Yeah.
It was a lot.
It was.
And it was, and like black and white. And I remember when we got our first color TV, it was 13-inch color TV. It was just this little bitty thing. And we were just amazed, like it's in color. Technicolor. Yeah.
I think this was like a 10-inch. It was tiny. And the thing is, here's the funny part. My mom took that TV and watched it in the kitchen. Probably and basically until they stopped broadcasting broadcast signal television.
Yeah, I believe it.
And like she'd watch whatever was on it and she just, I mean, that thing was well into use into the 2000s in that kitchen. And I'm like, why didn't she get some? This works fine.
Her, Tony.
Like, okay, whatever. I kind of wish we still had that thing. I would, I'd hook up the Pong to it. Be fun. Although I do down that way a little bit. I do have an old tube television that I have all of my, I don't have that thing hooked up because that requires a different type of hookup. But I do have my old Nintendo 64, PlayStation, like the shit I had like late high school into like early adulthood hooked up down there. Do I ever use it? No, but it's there.
Ready to go.
It's there and it's ready to go. And there's something to it with the old TV sets. The things that were made for them look better on them than trying to put them onto a modern one.
Yes.
Anyway. That'll wrap up this episode of Real Ghost Stories Online. If you want access to our bonus episodes, advanced episodes, all that fun stuff, then become a supporter of the program. Check us out on Patreon. Just search Real Ghost Stories Online or Apple Podcasts. Our premium channel is right there for you to binge away on at your leisure. We do appreciate that support. Until next time, for Carol and Todd, I'm Tony. We will talk again real soon.